My name's Michelle Owu and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another project. The date today is the 3rd of October 2009 and the time is now at 1:23 p.m. Could you tell me your name, your age and where you're from?
Yeah, sure. My name is Raquel McCartney. I'm 26 years old and I live and work in Manchester.
How did you get here?
Well, last night we drove down the motorway. It took about 4 to 5 hours. Got here just after midnight and crossed over with friends of ours.
Can you remember how you first heard about this project?
Well, I was here in August and I wanted to visit some art events and exhibitions. I looked at the Time Out magazine and it just so happened that there were people on the plinth in Trafalgar Square and I was meeting a friend here anyway. So that got me really curious and eventually I googled it to find out a bit more about what was going on. And then I read that it was Antoni Gormley's project and that it had been going on since July. It's ending at the end of this month, is that right?
14th.
Yeah, oh, okay. So I thought, right, how do I get involved? And I was actually really surprised that the site only asked you to put your details, name, where you're from, occupation, and wasn't even asking for a proposal, but I thought, okay, I'll just give in my details, see what happens. Clicked, and then a few weeks on, I heard that I got a place. And then I actually thought, I wonder if everyone got a place. But then I'd seen that there were about 33,000 that applied, only 2,400 got a place. So I was quite psyched.
Why did you think it would be something that you wanted to be involved in?
Well, I thought that for an hour, you could do anything that you wanted. And as an artist myself, I'm involved with performance art and I also make video performances. So I immediately knew what I would do if picked to do the hour slot. I thought I would take an empty filing cabinet onto that plinth and get my body into the cabinet, get my body out of it, into the cabinet, out, you know, and stand up again, and repeat the same process over and over for the entire hour without getting out of the cabinet object itself. I would do that to test my body's limitations and also test my mental, well, just the idea of doing that 100-odd times in an hour is daunting, really. And the initial idea actually stemmed from my childhood experience of playing hide-and-seek games. So I would hide in my mother's wardrobe, and I was fascinated with small spaces. So in my studio one day, I was experimenting with about 16 filing cabinets, emptying them out, dismantling them. And one afternoon, I thought, I wonder what would happen if I just lie the cabinets on its back and get into starting point. So can you envisage like an entire rail track in an empty corridor and do the same diving process sequence, like about, so it was 16 times further down the corridor and 16 times back towards the camera. And it was knackering. You could just see it from my facial expression, but for me it was really freeing as well, because I had overcome a challenge and, you know, all these obstacles. And something that Marina Abramovich states when it comes to tackling performance art is that basically if you don't confront something that you're afraid of, or, you know, confront your fear, then you don't change. And a lot to do with my artwork is concerning the idea of testing my mind's, you know, limitations. And yeah, I'm really influenced by artists from the 70s and or performance art rooting from the 60s onwards. So yeah, I'm really glad to be out here in live, and you know, rain or shine, really, it's going to take place. And I don't quite know what to expect completely, but you know, I've prepared as much as possible, and I think that's all I can do, really.
What kind of preparation are you able to do?
Well, what I have been doing is uh, it's going into an empty cabinet in my studio and rehearsing these movements, you know, with this dress on, my leggings, and I actually tore my dress because the interior of a cabinet has got very sharp parts in it. So especially if you're not wearing long sleeve or trousers or boots, you're going to get cuts and bruises. I mean, I did the last time I performed it. So I don't, I'm not anticipating that part of the experience, but I know it will happen. I've recently been diagnosed with an illness called hyperactive thyroid. And I'm about to get it operated on. The fact is that I noticed I was getting really, really tired quite quickly. And I know life's busy and everything, but extremely tired. So I'd sleep in. And then even if I went to bed early and got about 12 hours sleep, I'd still be knackered. So I did ask the doctors what was going on. And they did some blood tests. And they diagnosed me with this. So I'm on pills every day, every lunchtime. And the whole concept of having to take that as a routine and having to face, you know, your body's weakness is not encouraging. But hopefully this performance can reference people's, I suppose, restrictions or obstacles in the everyday, whether that be to do with your health or in your environment or, you know, your day-to-day travelling or at work. And it can comment on this whole kind of futility of going through the mundane. The object itself sort of references the Institute, if you like, in libraries, in universities, colleges, work. And a filing cabinet, I mean, the ones that I use are obsolete. You know, they've been emptied, information was stored in there, and the fact is I've kind of brought them to life in a way by interacting with them. And I think with it being on the plinth is a reflection of all the other monuments that I'm surrounded by. Unless you actually know the history of these various monuments, they can blend in with the environment, can go unnoticed if you like. So yeah, I think that definitely mirrors what's happening with Anthony Gormley's intentions.
Are you interested in blending in or standing out?
All I'm interested in basically is surviving this hour, to be honest. Whether
it's quite daunting.
It is. In fact, this past week, I've been rehearsing it, and it's been about a couple of years since I last performed this on video. I've felt like I wanted to spew, but nothing would come out. I'd be in there, and it really, it reeks inside. I cleaned it out of the dust, and you know, I scrubbed it hard and everything, and it just, I don't know what it's like to be in a coffin, but it might come close to it.
Have you always been concerned with pushing yourself physically, challenging yourself in your work, or is that a relatively recent
development? I think that idea has been consistent in my work. It's also a reflection of my upbringing, and the fact is, well, my origins are from the Philippines, and in that culture there can be quite a strict parent-child upbringing. So in a way, I suppose it's a bit like rebelling and yet confronting certain traumas from my childhood through the way I interact with the materials, and then through process and experience and capturing it on camera or live, I can in some way rise above my past and bring some kind of closure into it through seeing art happen.
How do you feel about the live experience compared to videoing your work?
I think it's interesting. I think that when I make video, I also incorporate the surprise moment, so the unexpected. One example, for instance, is a work that I did in 2007 in Manchester. One of its busiest streets is Portland Street, and I literally rolled across the street in tent fabric that was patched together. And I'd rehearse and rehearse. So on the morning itself, just before rush hour, I rolled across halfway of the pedestrian crossing and the green man went on. Now, what had happened was a white van from the left-hand side turned a corner and he obviously wasn't supposed to do that. But on camera, you've got this vehicle approaching me as I'm rolling across, and it's on slow frame. So, like, it's only a matter of seconds, that distances us, but I get across to the pavement safely, and the vehicle passes by. But you see, that's the beauty of the way I like to capture the live on film as well. And like I said, you know, if it rains, if the winds are really strong, well, we'll have to see. At least there's nets there, I could just bounce off. I was having a conversation with someone earlier, if it did rain, I could possibly just use the cabinet as a shelter, but I don't know if I will. I think I've really decided to go through, you know, this.
Where did you study? Utility.
I went to the Manchester School of Art. So I did. No, actually, initially I studied architecture for 2 years. My second year I dropped out because I couldn't use a ruler. Then I moved into sculpture, did a BA in sculpture, and went to do an MA in art, in fine art.
So where did your interest in performance
spring from? I think that as a result of interacting and playfully experimenting with the objects available to me and dismantling them, and hence using my body, the self, as material on camera, I think it incorporates a bit of everything to me: space, objects, the body, video.
Is there any repetitive motifs in your work? Is there repetition a recurring theme in your work, or is it not? Is it just for this piece?
Yes and no, because there are various elements which spring from the works. For example, myself as a woman, myself representing an ethnic minority, myself undertaking difficult or challenging circumstances, or approaching painful experiences, and, you know, really drawing on emotions that I wouldn't naturally do if it was the day-to-day. But once I feel like I've exhausted an idea, like rolling across the road, for example, I wouldn't revisit it. Unless it was a new context for me. And I feel like this is a new context for me. So in a way, I'm taking my previous performance with the cabinets, called The Dive, which was performed in the corridor of my studios, and now in a completely different environment, but on a pedestal of a plinth, taking one object and myself. I think there are some consistencies, but it's a completely new work in itself.
What do you do when you're not working? I just spend your time.
I love going to body combat, although recently I've been really frustrated because of my health illness. I've not been able to go, so I tend to get frustrated quite easily or angry. Combat's a great way of fusing and just unwinding, if you like, and like getting all your anger and let the steam roll. And when I don't have that, I don't have that element of escape, so I can use art to relax a little bit. But when I'm not working, I teach kids art in an after-school club. It's really funny, actually. So we'll do a bit of painting, or we'll do some performance, some drama. But a lot of the time, I get my inspiration even from children, the way that they behave, the way that they talk, because I'm reminded of my own childhood. When I'm not working, my husband and I, we just collapse on the sofa, we chill out, grab some pizzas, watch DVDs, have DVD marathons. That's what we like to do. But we're quite involved with projects that involved us two a lot of the time. He's my best mate, so it's good fun.
How did you meet?
How did we meet? I met my husband in a church, actually. of all places. And we got involved with some student projects, so organising various retreats and conferences and talks. And we got to know each other, became very good friends, and then he asked me out. I said yeah. Dated for a year, been married 5 years, and it's amazing. Although we're very different, he's into politics, he lectures at the University of Manchester, and I'm completely different in that I'm very arty, just very spontaneous. I think we've learned over the years to really find common ground and like a common sphere, so that our, you know, our directions are really complemented by each other's strengths. So for example, I'm terrible at writing. He will help me by, you know, proof checking my work, for example, or, you know, if he's really stressed and up to his eyeballs, I'll just say, hey, let's go chill out, let's go see friends and have fun. And I think we work really well as a team together.
Do you have to do a lot of written proposals for things, or for funding?
Yeah, I've not really looked too much into funding. It's quite difficult when you're applying for various projects and funding, and to be honest, I don't want to get too caught up with that. I'd much rather ask Hugh to help me out with all of that jazz, because otherwise I just get really exhausted, and what I really want to do is just make art and experiment and do things and have a blast, really.
So where have you found those opportunities for showing your work?
Well, recently I travelled to Helsinki in Finland with a group of MA graduates, and that was really fun. Yeah, met with a really lovely curator, and over in Helsinki, truckloads of snow. We went in February and put on a really great show together. It was a lot of fun. I only graduated from the MA last year, so I've got some really good friends from the course, and I think it's a case of really encouraging each other along the way, because it is hard to try and survive as an artist, especially if you're at the stage of establishing yourself initially. So I think, yeah, we're there to support each other. I've been collaborating with various artists for my videos, but recently I was involved in Monica Ross's act of reciting the human rights in different languages. So for me, I revisited my dialect, which is Tagalog, the main Tagalog spoken in the Philippines, and I was commenting on Article 4 about how there shall be no more slavery, all slavery forms shall be abolished, la la la. And I got some help with a translation, and I was reciting it over and over again. And it was so strange, because in a way I can understand Tagalog completely, and yet writing it or speaking it is such a difficulty for me. So it was a really great experience to do that live amongst other artists.
Why is writing and speaking it difficult?
Well, when I was raised, my mother spoke to me in Tagalog, so I understood it. And when I'm faced with Filipino newspapers, I can break it down a little bit, so I verbalize it, and then I know how that sounds, which then means I can interpret it. But to even write a sentence out or to speak it is just not natural to me. I sound like a bit of an alien.
Where are your parents living?
My mother lives in London and my father lives in the Philippines.
And where did you grow up?
I was born in London and raised in London, actually, up till the age of 18. So I lived in Victoria, went to school in Hammersmith, went to college near Ealing. And to be honest, I wanted to get as far away from London as possible when I went to uni. It's a bit of a change of scenery. And now I'm really excited when I'm in London, from a different perspective, because I always wanted to do art. I've always loved art since childhood. I never really envisaged that I would actually undertake it as a career.
What did you think you would do?
I think I was encouraged to take up architecture or medicine, all those kind of very posh occupations, which I did give it a go, but then I figured I don't really enjoy it.
So how did your parents react when you told them you decided to go and study art, for example?
My mother flipped out, like she does most things I choose to do, and I don't know if my father really knows much about me, to be honest. I've written him letters in the past, but he's not very involved in my life.
Was it always that way?
Oh, we're going to get emotional. I'll be happy to talk about that. He was around when I was born, and I believe that I was living in the Philippines with my brother for maybe a year when we were really small. Then my mother wanted to have us raised in London. She was working as a nurse, and so that's how it all worked out. My father remained in the Philippines and has not really been involved in the life since. They've both remarried now, so yeah.
You said that your work, you can feel quite emotional when you're making a piece of work.
Yeah, I think it's hard. It is hard. Now I'm thinking about recent projects. But I believe that when I confront it through art, it's amazingly helpful to help me to identify where I'm at and how I can move forward. So, for example, a piece that showed at the MA, do you recall Johnny Cash's song Hurt, originally done by Trent Reznor? Well, big fan of Johnny Cash, and I managed to get his song on karaoke. And here's me just having a bad day singing in our living room. We've got a karaoke. And I just situated video camera on the corner. Bob's your uncle. I managed to execute a work which The screening of the karaoke also captured my shadow from a distance. So when played, it sort of questions the social setting of how, you know, karaoke is experienced, and are we in the private room of the performer or singer themselves? And you know how it is with Britain's Got Talent and The X Factor today. Yeah. The entire hype of it, and just, I suppose, what's it all about at the end of the day? You know what I mean? Yeah, I think we're all too familiar with that, Big Brother. And that's why I think it's really interesting, Gormley's project, the fact that he's just given people so much freedom, apart from using glass and bringing lighters up there. What else is it?
Do you see this as entertainment or not?
Do I see it as entertainment? Well, from what Gormley says about wanting to sort of capture and envisage where a bit about Britain and its population by getting individuals up there almost randomly, if you like, I think it's interesting in that it can comment on society today and and questions what we see as entertainment or what we see as just leisure or a bit of a laugh, really. Yeah, how much time have I got?
Is there anything else?
I just want to say thanks for letting me use your studio to warm up, do my stretches.
You're welcome. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay.